in perhaps, you know, the world's greatest sporting precinct, right in the shadows of one of the world's greatest cities.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Magnificent mark taken by Royal Park.
A fighting is in the time.
He gets inside, well inside.
In any weather you can see a sweeping wind. Listening to the skin, you're not really behind the chair.
Oh, Cochin, just a little bit of genius.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And it was a tough week, but I think we at least feel like we got our dignity back this week.
Yeah. So I tweeted, deliberately did it halfway through the last quarter, that I think we played the game tough and well. And
I mean, I thought that showed remarkable perspective at the moment, I must say.
It was a moment. Don't get me wrong. I think incredible anxiety and nervousness about the game, but it was deliberately done because I wanted to have it on record that I thought we played okay. I was objective enough about the game to still appreciate that we played well, even before I knew that we won. Unfortunately, it didn't work out like that way. And, you know, maybe we can talk a bit how we felt about the result, but I thought it, in the opposite to last week, that we were coached well relative to the talents of the team. I thought that Vossi's injury, or through the Bulldogs got injuries much later, Vossi's injury really hurt us because he was playing a crucial role in the team and it affected our rotations. I thought we went back to the old problem, not being able to kick enough goals, but I was actually fundamentally impressed by much of that game tactically.
Look, it was such a roller coaster ride, and from the very first moment, and actually the very first moment was almost my favourite point of the match, and I know how much you enjoy ruck work, and interesting decision by the Bulldogs to not play a specialist ruckman at centre bounces.
Ruckman at all. Yeah.
Well, they played Tom Boyd, who has been rucking for them this year. But it only took literally 3 seconds into the match to show why it would actually be a dumb idea not to play a specialist ruckman when big Ivan Soldo, and God bless him, I'm sure we've got more to say about his debut, but at the very first centre bounce, he lined up his opponent and I'm pretty certain got him in the thigh with one enormous raised leg. And that's why you don't expose a valuable midfielder in the ruck, because some gigantic bad man is going to try and hurt you.
Yeah, but that wasn't against Boyd, was it?
No, that was against Dunkley.
Yeah, that was extraordinary, and it was ironic the week before we had been criticising our own team for deciding that had gone against 100 years of conventional wisdom that you don't need a centre half forward. The Bulldogs did the same thing. They went against 100 years of conventional wisdom and decided you don't need a ruck at all, or any tall person who's vaguely capable of waving an arm at the hit out, and they got rewarded with having a 4-goal deficit at quarter time.
And look, it could have been. Look, I thought they played to once. I think perhaps they had reasonably low expectations of Ivy Junior. But once he settled into the game, he was directing some taps nicely, and that shouldn't have been that big a surprise. I think we saw him play towards the end of last year, and there were moments where if he physically dominated his opponent, he could put the ball down his opponent's throat. But yeah, I just looked at that and thought, you know, as you know from experience, Andy, that you know that you can get a monster corky from an opposition ruckman that can leave you sore for days, weeks, if not months,
or the rest of your life. By the way, we were up by 5 goals at quarter time. I should just correct myself. But yeah, and part of that was, yes, the Bulldogs won plenty of clearances without a ruckman, but if you looked at actually the scores from the clearances, we were significantly ahead at quarter time. So yeah, it was unconventional, and it was a little bit of an FU to Ivy Jr. that they even tried that tactic in the first place. But, you know, good on Evie, and that was certainly the highlight of the game for making them pay that, making them man him up and play the closest thing they had to a conventional ruck, which was Boyd in that game. So, yeah, it was very interesting, the first quarter. And
What did you think of his debut as a whole?
Okay. You know, it's hard to say for that first quarter. As I said, it was an FU. So the fact that he was competent in response is what you expect of someone who's on, what you'd hope from someone who's on the AFL list. I don't know, you know, huge amount of hitouts. Let's just say Nank is super healthy this year, and next year it may just be that Ivan Soldo retires, leaves the AFL with the highest ever average hitout rate.
Look,
unlikely, I know, but you know.
Yeah. Well, if you look at our ruck situation, he's the backup with Hampson being injured, no immediate timetable on his return. I honestly feel a bit better about the situation than I did before his debut. It was, you know, I've sort of followed his progress and has been progress, but it was probably slightly better than I expected. And there were some moments, even the last 5 minutes, where he showed a bit of increasing confidence in the contest. So yeah, he's not elegant, and you know, he's always going to have a sort of plodding element to his game, but you know, he showed moments of competence.
Yeah, so before we get into the analysing individual players, you know, there's a few things we should talk about the game from a macro perspective.
We started off talking about the very first play of the game, and do you want to talk about the very last, almost last play of the game? Because I do feel that, you know, normally, and you know, we try and provide a very balanced analytical view on this show, and I'm certainly more sympathetic to an umpire since I've taken it up in my middle age. But how much of a shocker was that Jaden Short decision?
Well, it's my least favourite thing when umpires play reputation, and they got influenced by the crowd.
I think they didn't. I thought it was a fatigue mistake, because normally my
first... Look at you making excuses for the umpires. Oh, he was tired. He couldn't make proper decisions.
Well, they get tired too, because it's the only way you can explain it. Because normally, if you get a really bad decision, often it's because the umpire's unsighted. But I checked on that one. He had good position. He just didn't. He didn't think about the game. He didn't think about the context of the game, which is an inexcusable mistake in the last minute. Because there's no other rationale other than he was tired and had a brain fart. Because it was a massive mistake.
So Bill Simmons would say, reigning premier playing team that was bottom team that wasn't expected to win, ball went out in front of hometown supporters, the crowd was very loud, the umpire paid expectations because Western Bulldogs were meant to win that game, Richmond was not, and So the conspiracy theory is not actually a literal conspiracy theory that was conscious, but his subconscious was that Western Bulldogs should win, where Richmond should lose, and that supports the theory of why the free kick count was 2-1 too.
Mm. Look, at his AFL is a really hard game to umpire these days, and the out of bounds rule, particularly, and holding the ball is not much easier, but. Yeah, you've just got to have a better feel for the game than that. And yeah, the umpires didn't have a great day. Generally, I thought. I mean, it was a fantastic game of football. Generally, I mean, I feel, you know, a few days later, I've got the perspective to say that. But yeah, we were up to our eyeballs in it.
Okay, a couple of points I'd make also just about the game. Firstly, about that out of bounds, had it been a throw-in, if you looked at how we're handling stoppages throughout the game, I think we were no better than a 10% chance to kick a goal from that throw-in. So it's not like we lost a guilt-edged chance to score. Secondly, The very good theory. I think it was from Simon Wallace, if it wasn't for another friend of the podcast that made the point, did we lose because Nank didn't play? Perhaps. And Nank would have made a difference. But the Bulldogs also would have
helped with the clearances.
It would have, but the Bulldogs also wouldn't have done that dumbass thing they did in the first quarter, which, you know, they went in 5 goals down. So, you know, there are a lot of variables in the game. And lastly, I'd just make the point that the inside 50 count was 62-47. So in many ways, you could say that it was a triumph of forward efficiency that we were as close as we were.
Well, that was also a story of they got on top in the midfield, whereas our defence, particularly in the first half, even in the first quarter when we were leading handily, but our defence was just rock solid, and both Asprey and Rance were immense all day, I thought, and as you said, Vlossie was very good down back until he got injured as well. Like the only time when things really got away from us was when it was broken play, unstructured, and the Bulldogs got a break. Because when it was slow play, we were dominating contests.
Well, one thing I will say to the Bulldogs' favour is when they hit the lead, I believe it was the go ahead goal or the next one. It was late in the game, obviously, and we were red hot, and our pressure was, we were pressuring the ball really quickly, I thought we were doing a great job,
Hands under pressure. Yeah.
Exactly. The hands under pressure were just so good that where other teams playing against us had turned the ball over, they didn't. And at some point, you've just got to go, well, fair cop. You know, whether they're throwing it or not, that's an issue for another time. But they're just hands under pressure were noticeably better than any other team we played. And because of that, they kicked 2 goals late and broke through our pressure. So, you know, sort of fair cop. But, you know, we were doing enough to win that game under most circumstances. So, you know, that was part of the reason why emotionally I was sort of okay with it afterwards. Because it sucks that we lost, but... I felt like we were playing the last few minutes well. The only other thing I'll add is historically it's always been easier to chase down a lead at Etihad. It's just the way the game plays. So I was never that confident in the game. In our lead, we got up to 35 points or so. It sucks that the other team came back from behind. We've chased down two high 20s deficits.
I know. And I saw a tweet on the weekend that a quarter of all teams trailing at three-quarter time this year have won, which is more than twice the normal average. So, yeah, there is. And I noticed it in pre-season as well. Teams were running down some big deficits. So, yeah, I certainly never felt secure. I mean, I always feel horrible and nervous until we're beyond the historical precedent of being able to lose.
Absolutely. So, individually, anyone you particularly stood out to you?
Oh, look, sort of bits and pieces here and there. Look, I mentioned Asprey and Rance again, and they were both fantastic. Thought Jack played well at the other end as well. And I've been a fan of Jaden Short for a while, and Jaden Short getting close to 20 disposals is a very good thing. Indeed, in my book. Todd Elton frustrated me a bit less than he usually does.
Surely that's his best game.
Yeah, probably so. I'd like a goal. Is that too much to ask from a key forward?
Yes, and not dropping, not interfering in other kicks that probably were going for a goal.
Yeah.
All right, Nick. I've been avoiding this question for a few weeks. Would Liam McBean be doing a better job than Ivan Soldo?
Not Ivan Soldo. Todd Elton, possibly.
Oh, sorry. Then Todd Elton. Todd Elton. Would he be doing a better job than Todd Elton?
Tough question. I mean, you're talking about a guy who didn't get picked up for an AFL list, but then again, Elton has been so marginal, it's hard to tell. Yeah, I'm probably still a bit emotionally fragile to address that question, I might say.
I didn't raise it lightly.
No, I know.
And I do sort of think about Alice Balance of, you know.
The great thing for me about both Nank and now Ivan Soldo playing well is that it crystallises our list management decisions very easily at the end of the year. We just need a key forward and a key back, and probably at least maybe two key backs, or, you know, three, including a guy who can play at both ends. Like, we just need some new big players. Like, you know, seems like our ruck depth looks better than it did, but yeah, need some key position players.
Couldn't agree more. Should we have kept one more marginal forward?
Yeah.
Which would have been Lynn.
Look, I think the two first round draft picks, if there's players of reasonable value, either in the draft or via trade, I think key position's got to be the priority.
And, are you confident that the existing administration will make the right choice given their past record?
You never know. It's a tough decision drafting key position players unless you're in the top three.
Even beyond
the top five, they take a long time to mature, and their success rate is really iffy. So
they sure do, and you can often get sacked before they come good, which is why it takes a lot of guts to draft them.
Yeah, and so, you know, if Josh Shackey's available and doesn't cost the earth, that's, you know, if you can skip the 18 to 20 part of his development curve, that's a good thing. So, but anyway, discussion for a later day. Speaking of, taller players, I think McIntosh is getting better in the air defensively, which was something, you know, that's been a problem with him in the past, but he's holding up better, and I think he's slowly rounding out his game, which I like.
Well, you know I'm a fan. Anthony Miles' return wasn't quite the statistical bonanza. He was actually almost as mediocre statistically as Dion Prestia has been. His game was almost identical to Dion Prestia game.
He did get one of his trademark high tackle free kicks.
Which led to a goal.
Badly needed goal. So I enjoyed that. Look, it seems like he'll have another week, which I'm perfectly fine with. Josh Cuddy again, you know, he played well, didn't play badly. Didn't play, you know, and you sort of feel like there's possibly another gear there.
The advanced stats liked his game. He had more score involvements. It was probably his best game for the club thus far. I mean, still not, you know, 20 touches, one goal. Yeah, it was one goal.
Yeah.
There's nothing to sort of redefine expectations, but it was, as I said, probably his best game for the club. Still.
Look, I thought clearly our three small forwards were a bit down. I mean, Dan Butler had that goal, which, you know, was a pretty eye-popping moment in the first quarter. I thought maybe Rioli still not quite 100%. Fit enough to play, but I thought he just wasn't quite as dynamic as he is sometimes, but I have an idea for you.
Okay, before you do, it sounds like you've got a hot take. I've got a slight thing with Rioli. Rioli had become one of our best, most important players. That's a lot of pressure on a 19-year-old, and 19-year-olds are inherently variable, which is another reason why I'm not so upset by this game, because Rioli was not always going to be one of the key players in the last 10 minutes of a game that helped us win, which he has been for two or three games this year. And this week he didn't do anything special. Which is going to happen with a 19-year-old. 19-year-olds are allowed to do that. And so he didn't really kick. He didn't really give us anything in the last stretch. And that's okay. Like I said, because he's allowed to make mistakes, to not always be perfect, because he's at the age where performance is a variable. So that was another reason why I didn't feel so bad about the game, because, he didn't pick us on us back and drag us over the line, which he has done in probably at least one game this year. Anyway, what's your hot take?
Well, it's, you know, I'm a very big fan of the original Star Wars trilogy, and that I loathe the second trilogy, beyond words can scarcely express. But
well, that's a controversial hot take. Anyway, go on.
Well, I think it's time for to try out a second trilogy at Richmond with Shai Bolton replacing George Castagna.
That soon? After George... Shai's had one... Look, let's be honest.
He's had two games. Look, it's tough. Yeah, I mean, a fantastic game against Brisbane, and he could have won the Carlton game off his own boot. I mean, he still won the game, but, you know, he had six shots at goal, so he was working pretty well. But, yeah, and look, I still think Castagna's got a fair bit to offer, but I think also, Bolton's form has been good, but this week it was really good, and... He's good enough overhead to be a bit of a marking target, which Castagna's been, and he's also got a lot of X factor. So look, I'd be more than happy to see him get a go this week.
Or controversially, you could play sort of four small forwards with one of them coming off the bench, because, you know, maybe we don't need all those half-back flanks.
Well, it didn't. Corey Ellis's game did pain me, I must say.
Corey Ellis was a separate issue. Let's not confuse. Let's not confuse the two issues.
He was off half-back a fair bit of the time. But
I would have liked to
play better.
Oh, he sucked. He was awful. Mm. That was a horrendous game. Let's be honest. Like, I wouldn't have said that about him 2 years ago in the same game, but that was a horrendous game. And he had to be the key halfback, the distributor, after Vossi went out. Not the Vossi's high possession game. He clearly did not deliver. But that's maybe who do you replace him with, where you've got the question of Hunt or Menadue, or, you know.
Well, Menadue's been our best player in the VFL, so, the idea of Hunt getting a game again gives me hives. So that's a, but we've got a
replace
Vlossy. Vlossy.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. But you could theoretically replace, if you didn't want a one and done Ellis and thought, well, okay, we'll give him another week, let him earn a bit of confidence. Then you've just got to replace Vlossy.
Vlossy with Menadue. I think, you know, other than if you're going to Bolton for Castagna, I would think about changing it up and giving Lennon another go, actually, because he's worked pretty hard, and he's the other guy from the VFL who I think, you know, if you're looking at someone to step up based on form, That would be the other one for me.
And here's the thing, we are not, once again, as we have been every single year since 2012, I think, we are much better defensive team than we are offensive. Our problem is, if you consider a 5-2 team to have any problems, is we don't kick enough goals. Our problem is not that we don't stop them. So someone like Lennon, there's a case that he will increase your offensive output.
Yeah, he's got to be playing at peak intensity, which has been a challenge for him at times. But yeah, I've said before, like his marking at VFL level is elite, and for whatever reason he just hasn't had the confidence for that at senior level. So yeah, that would be why I'd be inclined to certainly have him in the 25, but think about him for the 22 as well.
Anyway, I look forward to Steve Morris being picked out of all those options.
Yeah.
Any other? I wanted to highlight Cochin, who didn't obviously 20 touches, you know, but had twice as many tackles as any other Richmond player.
And some of those intercept disposals in the last quarter were pretty fantastic as well.
And because of that, his AFL ranking, as we've discussed many times, imperfect ranking, but is now actually much closer to his reputation than and what it was when he was in his prime, sort of 2013, than it has been for at least last year. And a lot of that's got to do with meters gained, that his possessions are now going somewhere. But yeah, it was a really nice little story in the AFL today that he's back. I think he's rated 38th in the AFL, but it's a big improvement from his last few years, and the arrow's going in the right direction.
Yeah, it's good. Was there anyone else you wanted to talk about from the seniors?
Oh, no, we mentioned Elton, that he's most vaguely competent game. And Sean Grigg again. I checked the numbers on Sean Grigg, and actually there's no... To me, it seems like he's having his best season, but actually, statistically, last year was just as good. I guess no one noticed because we're having such a terrible year overall.
Yeah. look, for the VFL, ironically enough, they led most of the day and lost by a kick against the Bulldogs as well, in a curtain raiser, which I got to say is something. Look, I'm extremely fond of the curtain raiser at Punt Road with the $5 cans, but having a proper curtain raiser is pretty good fun too.
Yeah. Individual performances that sort of, I think we've highlighted, Matthew was good.
The three to come up, I think we've mentioned. Ryan Garthwaite, we've mentioned a few times. He had trouble with Jack Redpath, who's about 105 kilos, which is reasonable enough. But he also played pretty well against Stuart Cremery, who's no mug, and he was goalless for the day, so it wasn't a complete write-off. But I do think the VFL team is suffering a bit from that. Our injury list is out to about 10 players. Also, so yeah, they're not, they're not playing quite as well as they were a few weeks ago when it was closer to five.
Yeah, losing Town, Miles, and Townsend hurts.
It's a big loss. Look, I already mentioned Shai Bolton, but Tyson Stengel had another three goals, emphasising we finally got a bit of depth in that position that is nice.
If you wanted to make a case, like, seriously, you can make, based on a body of work rather than the last week, you can make the case that Tyson should play in front of Bolton.
Mm. Yeah, it's pretty close, but yeah, it's good. In terms of guys coming back from, well, obviously coming back from suspension, Nank will be back, but Shane Edwards apparently will, the word is he'll be named in the squad, but, you know, with a question about Mark about whether or not he'll actually play seniors. Like perhaps he might play half a game in the VFL instead, but he's on track for Dreamtime, which is a very good result.
Yep, as long as we see him back eventually, that'd be great. But no one else looks...
Not particularly imminent, no. Ben Griffiths is back. Running at least from his concussions, but yeah, nothing too imminent there, sadly. Although Jack Graham's finally making some concrete progress on his recovery, which is good because I would, it'd be nice to. I don't think he's a realistic candidate for senior football this year, but I'd really like to see him have a good go at the VFL.
Yeah, I thought it was contrary evidence to that, but that's, I haven't seen a video, but that's fine.
Well, no, he's gone from, he was listed as indefinite for a while to now he's listed as 4 to 5 weeks. So I assume that means he's making progress.
Mm. And Dion Presley remains a mystery on some levels.
Well, that seems to be the, conditioning expectations for him to miss again this week and possibly play next week, but yes, as you say. Look, the only other off-field thing I wanted to mention quickly, just because it honestly made me laugh more than anything else, was we've mentioned before the Richmond's Indigenous and Multicultural Academy from a zone from Northern Victoria. There's been talk that there's some pretty good young players in that zone, and that was reinforced. The AFL had a process whereby you can nominate players that you're interested in to come down and train with the club, and you know you can keep a closer eye on them. And you know some players nominated one or two players, others nominated a bit more. But, you know, they're all, for every other club, they just nominated players for either of the 2017, 18 or 19 drafts. We not only went to 2020, which no other club did, we went as far as nominating a 12-year-old, our draft interest in a 12-year-old who is eligible for the 2023 draft, which is so absurd that I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I know recruiters look at guys that young, but yeah, it was. I take your point. Interesting.
Interesting. Look, the word is it's a pretty good zone, but just nominating, you know, so 42 clubs nominated 42 players in total, and we nominated 13 of them. So that's a pretty good proportion.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Fremantle this week, last I checked, were 16.5 point favourites. Fremantle have had fair to say, a pretty mixed start to the year. A solid win on the weekend, but you know they're also clearly in a bit of a rebuilding phase. What strikes you from looking at them?
It's a difficult one. I mean, so when they built the Bulldogs, Hill was their highest possession winner with 33, round three. I should explain. You look through the record, they've had two impressive wins. They've had some bad losses, smashed by the Power in round two, but they basically had two credible games, which was beating the Bulldogs in Western Australia. Stephen Hill was sort of close to BOG. And he'll be out against us, and they beat the Demons in the MCG. The Demons at the MCG is the win that worries me. Other than that, their last three games in a row have been at Domain. They got touched up easily by the Eagles, and then they just beat the Kangaroos, and they beat the Bombers comfortably. So they've beaten two crap teams, lost easily to the Eagles. So other than that, you're really looking, if you're going to argue that the real threat, you've got to look at the Demons and the Bulldogs game. Let's look at the Bulldogs. Yeah, sorry, I'm overanalyzing it. The Bulldogs game, I sort of, they deserve to win. But that was sort of the Bulldog at the height of the Demons' injuries. So I don't know. How are you feeling?
Well, look, it's it. You look at their key position players, so they've had a real generational transformation from the Pavlik McFarlane era. So now it's Cam McCarthy and Shane Kirsten up forward. And look, McCarthy's definitely a talent. And Kirsten's a bit of a meh for me. And Joel Handling's all right as well. I mean, Matthew Tabernard played particularly well on the weekend, so you know there's some guys there who can pop up, but they don't scare you you know, if you're thinking about Rance and Asprey matching up on them, you know, you're not too scared. I think you've mentioned him quickly, but Brad Hill is the one who's been a real bellwether player for them when they've been up and about. He had 37 disposals in their win on the weekend, and he gives them a lot of run. And, you know, their midfield is the strength of the team, with Fife, Lockie Neal, enormous quantities of hit-outs from Sanderland. So, yeah, you've got to think about how to beat that, because they're still, even last year in the disaster of the season, they were still a pretty good defensive team once they had a chance to set up their zone. But, yeah, they were very vulnerable if you could split break even in midfield. I think their overall quality of their team doesn't impress Neil that much. So, yeah, it's an extremely winnable game. And, look, we're very clear favourites, so we should win. But, yeah, there are also reasons to be nervous.
There is, and we are. I mean, Fremantle aren't the dad's army that they used to be, but we are fundamentally a young team. Whereas the possibilities of putting in a shocker, the Nankinator against Sandy might not go that well for us. Until the ball hits the ground. But you know, actually, I'm quite confident about this game, so it's almost certainly going to end in tears for me.
Yeah, I know. They had 59 hit-outs to 18 on the weekend, which frankly is okay if Nank has 18 touches, 4 tackles and a goal. Who cares?
I think the difference that the Bulldogs didn't get is it's one thing to win the hit-outs. It's another thing for the ruckman who's winning to not feel any pressure at all, so can only concentrate on where to hit the ball.
Yeah.
And so Nank just has to be competitive.
Yeah. You know, look, Nank sometimes loses track of his opponent, or maybe that's how, deliberately how he's playing. But, yeah, he's a pretty competitive guy.
I think Nank's given a free reign.
Mm.
Once the right contest is over, I think it's a gunfight at the OK Corral. They think that Nank can score more than the other guy.
And Nank's got a pretty big tank. So I'd like to see him. You know, Sanderlands has always been absurdly mobile for such a big guy, but now he's an old big guy, and it's I'd put that mobility to the test.
Absolutely.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.